You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast at savage.love.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
If I were the conspiracy-minded type, if I was the kind of person who would treat the common cold with mercury or leeches or bleeding because someone I worked with once at a Cold Stone Creamery in high school posted something on Facebook about these miracle cures. And I do have a cold right now. Colds. Remember colds? I left the house for what felt like the first time in 2 years and promptly got a cold. A cold I am treating with DayQuil and tea and toast and television, not ivermectin or bleeding or leeches. Anyway, if I were the conspiracy-minded type, I would think there was some secret coded message buried in a story the Washington Post published last week by Josh Dossie and Michael Scherer. It's a really long-ass piece about how Trump has demanded that everyone in the GOP embrace the big lie, and about how everyone in the GOP has embraced the big lie, that lie being that the 2020 election was stolen. The big lie is a classic GOP move, a GOP move that predates Trump's political career by decades. Accuse your opponent of what you're guilty of. Or in Trump's case, accuse your opponent of the crime you attempted to commit yourself. From accusing Democrats of being elitists while heaping tax cuts on billionaires, to Trump accusing Dems of stealing the election he tried and failed to steal as he gears up to try to steal the 2024 election, accusing your opponents of your crimes, that's what Republicans do. And Democrats, what do? Fucking Democrats, they stand around in Washington doing nothing for fear that any move to prevent Trump from stealing the 2024 election will invite accusations that Democrats are the ones trying to steal the 2024 election. Accusations Trump and the GOP are going to make anyway, so might as well, you know, do something, Democrats. Anyway, if I were the conspiracy-minded type, I would think there was a coded message buried in the Washington Post story about Trump's speech at a big donor shindig in Iowa last week, because it can't be a coincidence that this was the 45th paragraph in a story about our 45th president. Unprompted, Trump brought up an unsubstantiated claim he had interactions with prostitutes in Moscow before he ran for president. "I'm not into golden showers," Trump told the crowd. "You know, the great thing, our great first lady, that one," she said. "I don't believe that one." First, it's sad, isn't it? The way Trump pretends Melania still speaks to him. And I guess she believed all the other ones. But second, and most importantly, there's a secret message buried in there. There's gotta be. I don't know what it is. If I had the galaxy brain of a QAnutter, always finding secret messages and numbers and patterns, maybe I could tease it out. But while I don't know what the secret message is, I do know what the secret message is not. The secret message is not that Trump isn't into golden showers. That man is definitely into piss. Yes, he denied it, like Hillary Clinton denies eating babies, but that denial, bringing up golden showers during a political rally, out of the blue, just to let everyone know you're not into golden showers, and then dragging your wife into it, apropos of nothing? I'm going to drop a little wisdom here right now, a little free advice, my specialty. If you don't want people to think you're into piss, don't tell people you're not. Don't go out of your way to tell people you're not. Just shut up about piss. Look, even if he's into piss, which he definitely is, I'm glad Trump denied it. Because if Trump confirmed he was into piss, or golden showers, which is what people over 50 call piss play, and can we pause here for a moment to consider that? It's interesting, linguistically. Decades ago, people into piss came up with a name for piss play that was equal parts euphemism and aggrandizing rhetorical alchemy. Piss is yellow, but gross. Gold is yellow, but desirable. So golden showers, not piss play. Who doesn't want to be showered with gold? Today, people who like piss, younger people, hipper people, queerer people, they just call it piss, not gold. You see guys walking around Folsom SF in rubber shirts that say piss on them or urinal on them. And no, not all those guys are gay. If you've been to Folsom SF, a big fetish street party, you know that it is at this point at least half straight people. Anyway, forgive me for all of these digressions. I am not well. I have a cold. I am not well in ways that are additional to all the usual ways that I am not well. Anyway, if Donald Trump is into piss play, which he definitely is, we don't want him to confirm that for us unambiguously. We want him to deny it, at least officially, even if his denial really is a kind of bank shot confirmation. Because if he were to publicly embrace it, if he got up on a stage in Iowa and said, I like my showers like I like my toilets, golden, you know what happens next? Piss is the new ivermectin, the new hydroxychloroquine. They'll all be doing it. Like wearing masks and getting vaccinated, piss will instantly become partisan, something MAGA people do. Sean Hannity will be knocking back pints of piss on Fox News, and Tucker Carlson will be pissing on Laura Ingraham at CPAC to show fealty to Donald J. Trump, Orange Julius Caesar. Look, I'm not into piss, and that is me denying it, I realize, but not out of the blue, not apropos of nothing. Piss is what we are talking about here. But I don't want Trump to ruin piss play for all my friends and all the guys I know out there, gay and straight and bi and pan, who are into it and who've spent a lot of money on rubber gimp suits with piss written in giant letters across their backs. Those outfits aren't cheap. Trump destroyed our brains, trashed the presidency, and may yet destroy democracy in America. We can't let him ruin piss play too. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and joining us on the magnum edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savage.love, twice as much show, more questions, more guests, no ads. Dr. Justin Lay Miller returns to the show to talk about the research he's been doing throughout the pandemic into how the pandemic has been impacting our sex lives. All that coming up today. This episode is brought to you by Allform, premium customizable sofas and chairs shipped right to your door. For 20% off your perfect sofa, go to allform.com/savage.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free. Go to thepillclub.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. I'm calling with a sex success story. I'm bisexual, have enjoyed fucking women with strap-ons before. It's been a while, and I've always wanted to peg a guy, and nobody I've been with has ever wanted to, but this guy I've been with for about 8 months, who really has not done things like that before, sort of slowly worked his way into lots of kinky shit with me, finally like asked me to do it and knew that I wanted to, and we made a whole sexy weekend. We spent like hundreds of dollars on a hotel room and went out to fancy dinner, and I got like two different holsters, and he picked out the dildo, and I ended up fucking him in the ass for like 45 minutes. I was wearing these wide fishnets and this sexy holster, and he just fucking loved it, and it was so hot, and he really liked when I leaned back and he would like bend up his legs and I would hold them, and now he just keeps asking for more. He just wants me to fuck him in the ass again as soon as possible, and we even filmed it, so we're gonna watch the film of ourselves, you know, me ass fucking him for the first time while we have sex again sometime soon, probably while I fuck him in the ass some more. So really happy about it. He told me recently that it seems like I was born to fuck with a dick, and I agree.
Thank you for calling in and sharing your success story. And did I hear that correctly? Did you say that you filmed this? Humpfilmfest.com/submit. Go there to find out everything you need to know about submitting that movie that you made of your sex success with your hot new boyfriend. Humpfilmfest.com/submit. Your film, your success could be in next year's Humpfest, Hump 2022. All right. Thank you for calling. Thank you for sharing, whether you submit or not. We appreciate the call. We appreciate the share. If anyone else out there listening has a sexual success story that you would like to share with us, give us a call. Share your story. We might start next week's Lovecast with yours.
Hi, Dan. I grew up in a conservative fundamentalist evangelical Christian household in Eastern Washington State in a town with about 1,000 people. I came out in my early 20s and it wasn't great. Even though I was at college at WSU at the time, I was afraid that my parents would want me to go to conversion therapy. So when I came out, I established a boundary. I told them that if they tried to pray the gay away, that I wouldn't be a part of the family anymore and I would walk out. They respected that and did not try to pray for me, at least in person, but still through the tears, they told me that I was going to hell. That really hurt, but I appreciated that they respected my request and that they were honest. To deal with this, I dropped out of college, moved to Las Vegas to be an acrobat. I did that for a while, got an entry-level IT job, went back to school at night. I got my bachelor's degree, moved around. I lived in Washington, Nevada, California, and Colorado, and I also then earned my master's degree. So this year actually marks a decade since I left my home state, and I visited my parents approximately 15 times during that stretch. They have never come to see me once during this time. I've had two significant long-term relationships, and during this time, while they did know about my boyfriends, whenever I would bring them up in conversation or anything for that matter that related to me being gay, they would shut down. Like literally my mom would just stop talking because she didn't know what to do or say. I thought that my story was just kind of the way it was of the standard parents condemning their gay children and having a strained relationship. However, this past year, all the pieces seemed to come together, and it turns out that I am actually autistic. What people would know is like Asperger's syndrome. I'm highly intelligent and intellectual, but I lack understanding of some basic human relationship functions. Learning this about myself was such a relief, but also a gut punch. I tried talking with my older sister about this and didn't get anywhere fast. And then I realized that everyone in my immediate family truly believes that I'm an asshole. And in truth, they're probably right. Because I don't understand what's going on a lot of times in interpersonal interactions. I do sometimes do things that are kind of asshole-ish and I don't know it. I've always been proud of myself for the fact that I was able to get on my own two feet when I came out, you know, and I stayed strong. But now I'm afraid that I was actually the majority of the problem when it came to my family relationships. Dan, I feel very lost right now, and I don't know what to do or if I need to eat crow.
So in the decade that you've been away, in the decade since you got out of the hell, frankly, in my opinion, that is Eastern Washington, which is where my husband's from, you finished college, you got a bachelor's degree and a master's degree, you had a successful career in Las Vegas as an acrobat, so you worked in the arts, which is a collaborative endeavor. You were in two long-term relationships, and you've been home to see your family in just 10 years, 15 times. Seems to me that two things can be true here, that you can have Asperger's syndrome. You sound like you have sort of high-functioning Asperger's syndrome, and your family can still be a problem, can still be assholes. You know, I've always been of the opinion, I've always observed, that to be an asshole, to commit an act of assholery, really requires intent, self-awareness, foreknowledge, malice. And you, until you got this diagnosis, there was nothing malicious or intentional about your failure to pick up on certain social cues or the ways in which your failure to pick up on social cues that inform interpersonal human relationships may have impacted your interactions with family members. So you're not guilty of assholery. There was a missing piece. There was a missing diagnosis here. There was something that needed to be on the table, that needed to be discussed, and that your relationship with your family members needed to be filtered through. It needed to be accommodated, understood, and it wasn't. And just the fact that you're engaged in this kind of introspection now, that you're worried that you might be to blame here, or the Asperger's might be to blame here, I think that by itself is evidence that you aren't and weren't the asshole. The Asperger's may still have impacted your relationship with your family members. It is something to discuss with them. It doesn't get them off the hook, though. Their inability to acknowledge the fact that you were in a relationship, their refusal to come and see you ever in the decade when you went to see them 15 times in that decade. And who knows, maybe they felt that you were coming home so often, 15 times in 10 years is actually quite a lot, that they didn't need to travel to Las Vegas or wherever else you were living to see you. That said, you know, your son goes to Las Vegas, joins the circus, is an acrobat, meets with some success, you go and you cheer your son on. And they didn't do that for you. Even if at a Thanksgiving dinner once in a while, you missed a social cue and you did something that seemed curt or rude, well, now that you know, you can look back on those events, those incidents, and your family members should be able to look back on those events and those incidents and understand them through the prism of your diagnosis. You weren't being an asshole. You were suffering with undiagnosed Asperger's syndrome. You were doing the best you could. Doesn't sound like your family was doing the same. Doesn't sound like they were doing the best they could. There's still time. They can maybe one day come around. Maybe one day, maybe after you apologize to them for the ways in which you may have interacted with them that seemed rude and it was just about your inability to read these social cues, they may be inspired to apologize to you for the horrible things that they said about you going to hell because you're gay and for the things they didn't say and the things they didn't do. You failed them due to something beyond your control, Asperger's syndrome, undiagnosed Asperger's syndrome. They failed you because they loved their imaginary friend or a particular interpretation of that particular imaginary friend more than they loved their own son. Yeah. If anyone was the asshole here, it was them. You can apologize if you think you need to, and maybe you do need to. You can role model what it's like to give an apology to a family member if, because of the Asperger syndrome, you offended them at times, and perhaps offended them without realizing you were offending them and without picking up on the fact that you had offended them. And then dot, 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 leave some space in that conversation. Create a little vacuum when you're with your parents next that hopefully they will rush in and fill with their own apologies. And if they don't, you aren't obligated to go home. And please look around, getting a bachelor's degree, getting a master's degree, two successful long-term relationships, a successful stint in the arts. You're obviously able to relate to people and people like you. So I don't think you're an asshole at all times to all people. And so, really, in this exchange with you and your family, if I was going to give the asshole award to anyone, based on what I know, based on what I can infer from your history, I would give it to mom and dad and your sister and everybody else back there in that small, shitty town in Eastern Washington. If you're looking to spruce up your home and it's time for a new sofa, I recommend you get yourself an all-form sofa. It's the same company that made our Helix mattress. So we knew it was going to be good when we got an all-form sofa, and it was. With all-form, you can customize a sofa using premium materials and at a fraction of the cost of traditional stores. You pick your fabric, and it's spill stain and scratch resistant. You pick the sofa color, the color of the legs, sofa size, and the shape to make sure it's perfect for you and your home. They also have armchairs and love seats. It's actually a love seat that we got, all the way up to an 8-seat sectional for everyone in your polycule, so there is somewhere for everyone to park it. And you can always start small and buy more seats later on. If you want your all-form sofa to grow and change with you and your polycule and your family when you move, all-form sofas are also delivered directly to your home with fast, free shipping. All-form takes just 3 to 7 days to arrive in the mail, and you can assemble it yourself in just a few minutes. No tools needed. Or, like me, you can have Nancy swing by and do it. She said it was easy. We have an all-form love seat. It's actually here in our offices. It's a cool retro teal color, and it fits perfectly in our studio and looks great. And sometimes I take a little nap on that tiny little love seat. I curl up in the fetal position, and it is so comfortable. You also get 100 days to decide if you want to keep it. That's more than 3 months. And if you don't love it, they will pick it up for free and give you a full refund. They even offer a forever warranty, literally forever. To find your perfect sofa, check out allform.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you, allform.com/savage. And Allform is offering 20% off all orders for my listeners at allform.com/savage.
Hey, Dan. I'm a 26-year-old bisexual male living in the Inland Northwest. So I've been dating this girl for about 7 months. And I fell in love with her. And ended up saying, I love you around 4 months in roughly. And so kind of waiting the past couple months for her to say something or kind of mulled over. And eventually I asked her basically, hey, how do you feel about me? Kind of situation, or asked her if she loved me. And her response was that she basically doesn't feel like she can love anyone right now and doesn't really feel strongly towards me at all, which was an answer I'm prepared for, but I guess the part where I'm confused and I need help is I'm not really sure where to go forward because she doesn't want to break up. She still wants to like date and stuff, but I guess just she doesn't love me and she won't ever. And so I'm kind of confused whether this is like a kind of a price of admission thing where I enjoy the relationship on my end and just kind of deal with it, or whether I break up with her and try to find someone who does feel the same way about me.
I'm confused that you're confused. She told you she doesn't think she could love anyone right now, which sounds like that white lie bullshit. It's not you, it's me. She also told you that she doesn't imagine a future where maybe she could get into a place where she could love someone. And if she could get to that place, she still can't imagine loving you. Huh. So this does not seem to me like a price of admission issue. It's not like you're putting up with something about her or her personality because the relationship is so good and there's love there. You're really kind of debasing yourself by accepting this relationship, by continuing on in this relationship. There's a certain way that you feel about her. You love her romantically. You are open to her in that way. And she is just not open to you in that way. And yet she wants, for the time being, until someone she could love comes along, she wants to continue to date you so that she's not bored, to fill the hours, to fill her pussy. I don't know what it is that she wants filled or wants done in the meantime until someone better comes along, or until she gets better, until she gets to a place where she could love someone. But she's already told you that even if she gets to that place, the someone that she could love or might love isn't going to be you. So you need to ask yourself, I guess, if you can build a firewall around your heart, if you can detach, if you can fall out of love with this woman and just enjoy what there is to enjoy for the time being, in sort of the same spirit that she's enjoying what there is to enjoy about you for the time being, the companionship, maybe the sex is great, maybe you have some mutual interests that you enjoy talking about or pursuing together. Maybe there's something there, and you can frame this as obviously going to be an STR, a short-term relationship, and get out of it what you could get out of it as you look around, perhaps, as she may be looking around, perhaps, for someone else that you could love and who could love you back. If I were you, and you're asking for my advice, I'm just going to project myself into your experience. If I were you, I would go. I would pull up my pants, pack up my dick, and get the fuck out of there. The longer you stick around, I think the worse the hurt and the rejection is going to get over time. And then when she does inevitably give you your walking papers, send you away, tell you she doesn't want to date you anymore because she wants to be alone, or as I think is more likely, someone else has appeared on the horizon that she imagines she might love or already does love. Ugh, that's really going to hurt. You asking her if she loved you after you told her that you loved her and waited for months, that had to hurt. It's going to hurt a whole hell of a lot worse if she ends this relationship such as it is 2 years from now because she's fallen in love with someone else. So, I would encourage you to end this now.
This show is sponsored by Squarespace. If you're setting up a business or getting a creative or political project off the ground, you will find an indispensable partner in Squarespace. They make it easy to put together a good-looking website, blog, or online store. They have everything you need: domains, marketing tools, analytics, e-commerce. Squarespace empowers millions of creative types and entrepreneurs by providing them with the tools they need to bring their smart ideas to life. You can put together video ads, launch online courses, put out a virtual tip jar. All the tools you need to monetize your website and reach your goals are there waiting for you. You'll create powerful email content that matches your website with your existing products, blog posts, and logo, so your messaging is consistent and effective. And what's more, everything you make with Squarespace translates perfectly to mobile. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan. I had a question about opening and closing a relationship when it started as an open relationship. My current partner and I have been together for 2 years, and we started out as an open relationship. It's actually a swinging couple, and we had a lot of fun doing that. The issue that we ended up having was that oftentimes I would set rules, and my rules would be more restrictive than his rules preferably would be always. Like, hey, this person actually insulted me at one point before we got together, and so I don't want you to fuck her. Or, hey, we just had this big argument, so even though we're going to the swinging event because our friends are there, I really don't want you to have sex with anyone today, and neither will I. Or, and we would have these sort of discussions, or, yeah, any number of things. Quite a few times, more than five, we would agree to a rule or something like that before a party, or it would just be a long-standing rule that he would break, and it would really hurt me. And he just doesn't, it never really seemed to understand that. And eventually it got to the point where I was just not comfortable being in an open relationship with him anymore, because the trust was just not there. And we've talked about how he may have impulse control issues around sex, and that might be why he's had so many issues with that. But the issue now is that we're now in a monogamous relationship, and we have been for a few months, and he is not happy. He's very resentful and carries a lot of bitterness towards me for ruining his sex life and lying to him about our relationship, because it started as open and I just told him, hey, I can't do this anymore. I carry a lot of bitterness that he broke my trust so many times, and I feel like he's blaming me for closing the relationship when really it's his own fault. And we both have so much bitterness toward each other, it's been really hard to move forward. And at this point, we both really love each other and are very connected, but we have so much negativity towards each other that it's almost just like living with a friend at this point.
Well, this relationship sounds like a lot of fun. I'm going to do my best here to save it. This relationship where you don't feel like you can trust him because he has impulse control issues around women who've insulted you. And he spends most of his time, now that you're in a closed relationship, now that you guys are being monogamous, accusing you of ruining his sex life and to pass the time between dinner and bed, because you guys aren't fucking each other anymore either. You're living together, basically, you say, as roommates. You just sit there assigning blame. It's his fault because he couldn't honor, because of his impulse control issues, the rules that you would set, including, I'm sorry, kind of ridiculous rules. Like, we're going to a swinging party, but we're not going to have sex with other people. We're just going there to see our friends. Seems to me, if he has impulse control issues and you knew it before you went to those parties, you don't go to the buffet if you're not going to eat anything from it. You don't take somebody who really loves to eat to a buffet and tell them that they're going to be in big trouble if they sample the hors d'oeuvres. You don't go out to eat in that instance. You guys should have skipped the fucking parties. The parties when you guys had had a conflict, when you guys had had a fight, and you weren't allowed, because you laid it down, you weren't allowed to fuck anybody else, and neither was he. The parties were just a bad idea. You should have skipped them and stayed away and only gone to the parties when you were feeling it, and maybe pre-screened events to make sure that no one that you didn't want him to fuck was going to be there. The only way out here is to either let him fuck who he wants to fuck, not make rules that you know he's going to break, and thus generate conflict in the relationship, which, you know, seems unfair to you that you're not allowed to lay down any boundaries. You're not allowed to ask him to honor those boundaries to demonstrate that you're his first priority. But if he's just going to sit around and sulk afterwards because he didn't get to fuck who he wants to fuck, or he has to be monogamous, he doesn't want to be monogamous, I don't think you can save this relationship. I don't think there's much of a relationship left to save unless recriminations and finger pointing amounts to a relationship. I don't think it does. To make this work, you're going to have to let go of or seriously relax the rules you lay down for him now that you know who he is and know what he's, I guess, incapable of. I'm not endorsing that. I'm not endorsing that. Open relationships work because the two people in, you know, an open relationship with, you know, two primary partners, it works because everybody respects the rules and the boundaries. That is necessary for an open relationship to survive. That wasn't a part of your open relationship. And again, I just come back to, I don't see how this survives. I don't see how I save it. I don't see why you want me to save it. I don't see why you're still in it. You say you love him. He loves you. That's great. Obviously, that wasn't enough to make this work. There is a fundamental disconnect here, an issue of kind of basic sexual incompatibility. He wants to move through the world without rules, and you want to be able to lay rules down. That's reasonable. And have them honored, have them respected. You know he's incapable of doing that. So, again, you have two options. Blow up all your rules, throw them away, or blow this up, throw it away. Doesn't mean you have to exit each other's lives. Doesn't mean you have to be enemies. You can love each other out of this relationship as you wind it down, which is what I think you should do. Do you need to renew your birth control prescription? Want to switch up your birth control? Maybe try birth control for the first time? If you know what you want, or even if you don't know where to start, Pill Club has your back. The Pill Club is a birth control subscription prescribed by a medical professional and delivered straight to your door for free in discreet packaging. The Pill Club carries over 120 FDA-approved brands. Most brands of birth control are free with insurance or Medicaid. Otherwise, prices start as low as $9 per month without insurance. What's more, the Pill Club's licensed medical team is just a text away to give you the best reproductive health care. So skip the office visit and skip waiting in line at the pharmacy. Join the club. And right now, when you go to thepillclub.com/savage, the Pill Club is offering a $10 donation to bedsider.org for every Savage Lovecast listener who becomes a patient. Your donation will help low-income individuals get access to birth control through bedsider.org. That's thepillclub.com/savage to get your first birth control care package and to donate to help more women in need of affordable birth control. Remember, thepillclub.com/savage. Let them know the Lovecast sent you. thepillclub.com/savage. You must use the link to make a donation.
Hey, Dan, white 40s Midwest guy here, gay guy. And I had a question, maybe that's kind of about consent, but is certainly at least about etiquette, about a hookup that I just left, actually. So I met this guy on Sniffies and we had coordinated a kind of like, you know, lights out, blindfold, anonymous scene. And I just went over there and we did that and it was great. It was a lot of fun. But on my way out, I recognized just some very like memorable art installation that he had in his apartment that I remember from the one time that I had been there before. I don't know him well, and I just met him recently. So, you know, I didn't get a good look at his face really during our play, but then afterwards I just kind of noticed this thing and was like, oh shit. So anyway, now I'm in a place where we kind of are in like a different dynamic with our agreement to the scene. You know, he's no longer anonymous to me, but I am still anonymous to him. So I just didn't know if that kind of violated any I don't know anything at all. And if I should just not, maybe not worry about this, or if I should tell him.
Well, aren't you a conscientious, anonymous ass fucker? I don't see the problem here. I don't see the violation here. You didn't search his apartment looking for his ID while he was blindfolded and in bed waiting for you, or while you were on your way out of the apartment. You didn't stalk him on the internet. You didn't go through drawers trying to figure out who he was. As you entered and exited his apartment, after you entered and exited him, you saw a conspicuous piece of art, and you put two and two together and realized that you knew who he was and that you'd met him before. Okay, well, if this is supposed to be a strictly anonymous scene, that might be something you have to disclose to him before the next time he has you over, if indeed there is going to be a next time that he has you over. You can say to him in the spirit of anonymous play, look, I saw something in your apartment and I think I know who you are. You don't know who I am, so we can still have an anonymous hookup. He might think that's sexy, or it might ruin it for him if he knows that you know who he is. But a lot of people who enjoy this kind of anon hookup, these anon scenes, part of what is arousing for them is the thought of moving through the world and maybe somebody who came over when they were blindfolded and got to see, you know, most of them, most of their face, except for what the blindfold covers, might run into them somewhere and may recognize them. And he'll be sitting there, maybe, for example, placing an order, and the waiter will look at him and the waiter will go, oh God, I fucked that dude. And he won't know. And for some people into this kind of scene in particular, that's what's sexy about it. The idea that out there in the world, you know, moving through the bars or moving through restaurants or at the gym, someone who used you, blew a load in your ass anonymously, recognizes you, and you can't recognize them because you were the blindfolded one, or he was in this instance, the blindfolded one. I think as a point of etiquette, if he invites you over again, perhaps you disclose this, that you know who he is, that you recognized him, and then he gets to make the call. He gets to make an informed choice about whether you still qualify as an anonymous play partner on his side. And my hunch is, if the sex was good, if your dick felt good in him, you're going to get another invite.
Hi, Dan. I'm a bisexual woman in her late 20s living in the Pacific Northwest. I'm in a long-term relationship with a man, and I love him very much, but a lot of questions about my sexuality have come up during the course of our relationship. There's a myriad of reasons why I didn't accept the fact that I'm not exactly straight sooner, namely mental health, a religious upbringing in Alabama. It's been an ongoing conversation with my boyfriend, who, of course, wants a threesome, but I really do not want my first sexual experience with a woman to involve unicorn hunting. Last weekend, my boyfriend expressed that he'd be okay with me experimenting alone, as long as he knows the logistics and communication is open. He's uncomfortable with me pursuing a relationship, but sex, especially if it's not an ongoing arrangement, is actually on the table. I'm excited about this, but the issue I'm now faced with is, where the hell do I go from here? I got the permission, but I don't really know what to do with it. I'm not planning to go out and meet strangers at bars, considering the pandemic hell we still find ourselves in. Apps feel like the most likely way, but how do I express to potential matches that I'm in a serious relationship and I'm just looking for what is essentially a one-night stand? It feels like I'd be essentially using another human being for the sake of my own selfish self-exploration, which feels wrong. I'm also somebody that has historically required a great deal of intimacy and trust in sexual situations, and I don't really know how to establish that, given these terms. That said, I really want to have this experience. I've never felt comfortable to explore my sexuality before, and I think if I didn't do it, I would probably end up resulting in some resentment with my boyfriend later on. I don't really know what to do. What is the most ethical way to move forward here?
Look, it's a fine thing to use another human being, so long as you're using that human being in a way they want to be used by you. And to find that human being, you're just going to have to hang that shingle out. It's great that your boyfriend is willing, I guess, to let you have your first experience with a woman on your own, isn't demanding, as some boys do when their girlfriends come out as bisexual, that your first experience be a three-way and all about him and his dick. You just need to go to him and say, look, I understand that you're threatened by the idea of me having a relationship with someone else, but I'm going to have to do a little bit of legwork to at least establish a rapport with someone else before I go to bed with that person, because I need to feel like I like somebody. You're not going to have, you're not a gay man, you're not going to be able to have a quick and sudden anonymous same-sex lesbian or hot bi chick hookup on your first try. You're going to have to put yourself out there, meet some women, chit-chat on some dating apps, and there are dating apps specifically out there for women seeking women. Get on them. Be honest about who you are. You know, you worry about getting on them. A lot of women who are realizing they're bi or just wanting to act on their same-sex attractions for the very first time and are in relationships with men are worried about offending lesbians that they might approach because they're just looking to use and get used by somebody. They aren't looking for a relationship. Well, just put out there that you're a bi woman in a relationship with a man looking for your first same-sex experience, and all the lesbians who aren't interested in that won't respond to your ad. You don't have to worry about wasting their time because they won't approach you. And as you know, you say you've been a listener to the show for a while. How many times have I gotten this exact call from a woman who's just come out as bisexual, is involved with a man, is married to a man, or has a long-term boyfriend that they don't want to leave, and is worried that they're not going to be able to find a woman out there in the world who's willing to meet them where they're at? Seems to me that there are enough bi women out there in relationships with men seeking their first sexual experiences that all of you could get together and take care of each other's needs, use and be used by each other. So put it out there. Get online, get on some hookup apps, get on some dating apps, and just be honest about where you're at. You got to push back against your boyfriend's restriction, though, that there can be no relationship. There must be a relationship for you to feel comfortable, to feel safe, to want to be sexual with someone. Again, if not a relationship, maybe use the other R word, a rapport. You want to establish a rapport. And if he's hoping to have a threesome at some point with you and another hot bi chick, that's not going to happen. That's not going to be a bolt of lightning from the blue. You're not going to trip and fall. Three-way is negotiated in advance, and he's likelier to get something that, you know, it's totally legitimate. It's fine for straight guys to want to have threesomes with their girlfriends and another woman. I've had plenty of threesomes with my husband and another dude. A threesome is an estimable state and a desirable thing. And men, straight men, shouldn't be shamed for desiring this kind of, I don't want to say cliche threesome, let's call it threesome classic, like classic Coke, but for threesomes. Just appeal to him. Just say to him, that'll never happen. You'll never have the threesome that you want to have if I can't at least chat with the women that I'm interested in sexually. At least establish a rapport, at least have some sort of connection. You can avoid the relationship word to make him feel better, but all sexual events, you know, all sexual connections happen between two people in a relationship. Whether that's a relationship that they're having for an hour and they're never going to see each other again, or a weekend, or several months, it's still a relationship. Just STRs, as I like to call them. Maybe your boyfriend will become a little less threatened over time. Maybe after you get out there and have a couple of experiences and come back to him and you're grateful and excited to tell him about it, he'll be less threatened, and you can use the word relationship to describe the things you're having with the other women that you have sex with. And one of those relationships, in the end, ultimately, will make it possible for him to have the thing he'd like to have with you and another woman, that threesome. All right, before we get to your response calls, let's read some listener tweets. Laura B. tweets, currently listening to Fake Dan Savage talk about butt stuff while dusting a Catholic altar. Is that a kink? Thanks, hashtag SavageLoveCast, for being with me during my workday cleaning houses. Thank you for taking us along on the ride, Laura B. Honored, in particular, to be along for the ride when you're cleaning God's house. IGBY82 tweets, is the 69 position still a thing amongst couples? IGBY82 or IGBY 82 included a poll, but Igby doesn't have many followers, and so far I am the only person who voted in his poll. Yes or no, is 69ing still a thing? And I voted no. So as of now, 100% of those polled say no, 69ing is not a thing amongst couples. If you feel differently, you can go and vote at IGBY82, and why not give IGBY82 a follow while you're there? And finally, Affaline fan tweets, I guess we will never be rid of the sex success stories. I hate them so much. I skip past it, but it still pisses me off because I love your advice, and it's time wasted. We can all read Dear Penthouse Forum if we want to. Love you, Dan, but please make it stop. Noted, we are reassessing success stories, and we will be soliciting feedback about the show from our subscribers very soon. If you love or hate success stories, let us know. And thank you, Affaline, for letting me know that I'm not the only one out there who remembers Penthouse Forum. All right, thanks to everybody who posted your social media accounts about the Lovecast this week. We appreciate that very much. And if you want me to potentially read your tweet on next week's show, be sure to include the hashtag SavageLovecast. And now, listener response calls.
Hey, Dan and the Tech Savvy At Risk Youth. I'm responding to episode 781 regarding Dave Chappelle's latest comedy special. As a middle-aged, black, gay, cis male, I loved his special, and it was a topic of joyful discussion with both my straight nephew and bisexual niece. My feeling is he's not running for political office, nor trying to take away any of our rights. He's a comedian with his own perspective that I find hilarious. To my fellow LGBTQ+ brethren, please check your human rights advocacy at the door, enjoy a good laugh, then pick up the advocacy mantle and go forth afterwards.
This is a response for the first caller from last week's episode who recently fucked her ex and had seems like had really great sex and then is now reeling from a new set of rejection. It seems like it's your expectations that are getting in the way here. You talked about how great it was to come during fucking him, and then you jumped directly to how you fell in love with him again. And it seems like you're taking the amazing new relationship energy and you're turning that into love because you already have a bond with this person, a friendship, and putting a lot of pressure on him. The baby thing seems like it might be a lot of pressure. And if you could zoom out a little bit and see it for what it is, which is like you had great sex and that lusty, amazing, like I want you electricity, that's kind of your pussy talking and that's great. Like it's, I don't mean that in any negative way. That is the best. And so let your pussy have all the fun if he's down. And try to recontextualize what you want from this relationship, because a baby and pressure in a relationship, it seems like you guys already tried that and you mutually agreed that that wasn't what you were doing. And so if you could just enjoy the friendship and the sex and take off the pressure, he might be into it. Otherwise, you should definitely take Dan's advice and go fuck somebody else with a big girthy cock who's going to make you come. But beware of the same trap that everybody who makes you come, it doesn't mean you're in love with them, because that is a loop that I see so many people run, and it almost never ends well.
This is a response for the caller who wanted to know what to call it when her partner slides his dick in between her labia. And I think the solution is staring you in the face, hopefully not literally, but lip syncing.
Obviously, the equivalent of hot dogging, but with labia, is hot pussying.
I thought of the toy from 1980 called The Wet Banana. It was like the flip and slide. Some people will remember it.
Here's Wet Banana. You can dash and splash on Wet Banana like Billy. You can dip and slip like Ricky. Slippery wet fun for the whole gang. Could that be Mom on Wet Banana? It is!
My group of friends provided some names for us. Shimmy dipping, clit warding, puddle stubbing, sneaking behind the curtain, drag stripping, dowsing, wet mapping, and my own personal favorite, schlitzing. You're welcome.
And we're going to leave it there. Got a question for me or a comment about this week's show? The best way to get us your question or your comment is to use the Voice Memo app on your phone. Record your question or your comment and then email it to us at voicemail@savagelovecast.com. You can also still call us at 206-302-2064. But we really do prefer those voice memos. The sound quality is so much better. The deadline to submit your film for Hump 2022, My Dirty Little Porn Film Festival, is coming up. It's in December. Now is the time to grab a partner or some partners and make your own smutty little flick to submit. Go to humpfilmfest.com/submit for all the info you need about getting your movie into Hump. And a reminder that my new book, Savage Love from A to Z, is out now, so go grab a copy anywhere books are sold. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. Follow Dr. Justin Lane Miller on Twitter at Justin Lane Miller. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We will all be back at you next week with another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you so much for downloading.